Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us today. Happy to be here as always. And I hope you're ready for the most scintillating hour of finance radio. Tongue very much in cheek. Anyway, every week. A lot of stuff to go over, a lot of stuff to discuss. As always, going to start with our market update, give you an update of where we're at, where things have been headed. Got several different things that we want to talk about. Like I said, you know, the beautiful thing, and I probably say this every week, but the beautiful thing about this market and this economy and this political environment is there is no, you almost don't even need to do show prep, really, especially for a 1 hour show. But there's so much. It's like trying to drink from a fire hose, you know. So anyway, we want to have several different topics we want to go over today. One of them is economics / politics. We had some really, really interesting comments from the Fed, and I feel a rant coming on. I'm going to hold it for that topic. But if you want to know why, when we have a guy like Bill Fleckenstein on, you know, and other, you know, Brent Johnson has done it, Keith Weiner. If you want to know why these guests and why yours truly can sometimes go off the rails on the Fed, I mean, shoot, Bill wrote a whole book about it. And interestingly enough, called the last downturn perfectly. I don't know if you guys remember that, but we did an interview. We've done several or multiple interviews with Bill. And he wrote a book about the green, you know, Greenspan's bubbles, about Alan Greenspan, former head of the Fed. And I think the Federal Reserve, and I want to dig into it today, obviously. But I think the Federal Reserve is greatly misunderstood or not understood at all by enough of the public, enough of the investing public, and the influence that they have. And what many, like myself, think is their incredible arrogance, their own sense of omniscience, their own belief in their, you know, intellectual superiority, and the foolish, reckless, damaging things that they've done to, in my opinion, both the country economically, politically, and then to the social fabric. I think that the Fed is, to lay the blame of you know, any type of event or any type of cultural turning or cultural, you know, outpouring or political strife, to lay it in the lap of one party would be, you know, that would be an error in my opinion. These things are dynamic. I think all too often in the world of politics and in the world of finance, we're looking for a silver bullet. And the thing that I think most people miss is it's almost always a confluence of events. It's just the way it is. And I think the same is true with a lot of these things. But I want to go over the Fed again. And what we're looking at, the name of the segment is The Fed Your Friend. So we're going to discuss that. Another thing that we want to address and we want to talk about is economic news. We've got some new economic news out. Want to go over kind of where we're at in the global economy. Also want to talk about the dirtiest word in investing again. I don't know why this keeps coming up. It's kind of a controversial, well, it's a controversial topic. It really is. But annuity. And I still hate the word. I just do. And I think that that's why you hear so many of these insurance type guys, even on this station, on the radio, talking about annuities, but they won't say the word. Or maybe they will because I've been begging on it. I've been hitting on it so hard. But want to have that discussion again and break down some key differences. Because look, here's the deal. And I think this is a perfect way to illustrate what it is that we're trying to do with this radio show. I know for a fact that even some regular listeners, people that download the podcast every single week, I know for a fact that there's going to be many of you who are prompted to do something or do an investment strategy that we talk about on the show, and you're going to implement it through somebody else. That's fine. But I want you to know what to look for, even if you don't go through us. I mean, granted, I'd prefer that you did. but I want you to be armed with the facts regardless so you can make an intelligent decision and you can understand. It reminds me of when we first started doing this. And I don't want to blow the topic here. But there was so much reticence because I knew the anti-annuity speech through and through. And I legitimately detested these products. But A, there was a level of ignorance involved. When you tend to hate something like that and you just write it off, right? You have to, at the same time, know. Unless you hate it through study, right? If you dig into something and you learn it inside and out and you just go, man, that's trash. Well, for instance, a good example of that would be a variable annuity. And let me throw this caveat in there. There are certain types of variable annuities, extremely low fee ones, that in certain situations can be good. But in general, the variable annuities that the folks are buying, the variable annuities that your neighbors got, the vast majority of them are trash. You're taking market risk, meaning your variable annuity can lose just as much as the stock market, but you're paying three times the normal fee to do it because of a guaranteed income rider, which is, well, okay, I'm getting into it. Sorry, let's stick with it. Let's stay on topic here. It's easy to rant on that subject because there's so much consternation. There's so much misinformation. There's so much misunderstanding. The other thing that I want to say, I don't want to forget this, because as investors, right, there's many different kinds of finance podcasts out there. What we're trying to do is we're trying to bring the sophisticated macroeconomic world of investing, right, the large portfolio, institutional type approach, and we're trying to merge that with the retail world because I think that there's so much value out there to so many retail investors. And unfortunately, a lot of them don't know that. A lot of them do not know that there are other approaches. A lot of them don't know that there are, we talk about it all the time. I'm trying to merge those two worlds. This is not there's tons of finance shows out there and podcasts and that are aimed at the professional investing crowd. Right. And they're going to sound far more esoteric than I am. They're going to talk in the right voice and, they're going to enunciate the right words and they're going to use, a lot of $10 words I'm totally blanking on his last name, but Ben Hunt, Epsilon Theory. I died laughing the first time I heard that. That's a $10 word. And I get it. You want to flex your intellect. I don't fault you. I just think a more valuable service, in my opinion, is being able to take these more complex issues and synthesize them down, so they're edible, they're digestible for the average person, because I want the average investor to understand what's going on. I want them to see the sanity, or excuse me, the insanity that's going on out there. And hopefully also point out opportunity as well, because, you know, we deal with this every day. Okay, but the traditional approach that is being taken in the vast majority of your portfolios, plain and simple, guys, it's not working. And it's not going to work. And there are structural reasons why it's not going to work. Let's just start with the bond side of the portfolio. Bonds is a hedge against the volatility in your stocks, okay? That has not been the case for a decade. And as a matter of fact, looking back through history, that's not the case most of the time. You've been sold a bill of goods. Okay, bonds do not always go up when stocks go down. Sorry, popping a lot of bubbles out there, probably making some financial advisors mad, but hey, that's the truth, okay? As a matter of fact, the majority of time throughout history, that has not been the case. And to build a portfolio on that, here's the other thing. So that if you listen to the average financial advisor, right, that relationship, they're going to call it your defense. That relationship is going to be the thing that they advocate, right? That's what they're putting out there. And you're currently getting a record low amount of interest to hold that quote unquote defensive part of your portfolio, but it's not playing defense. Look at last year's example, 2018. Every asset class, including stocks and bonds, were down. Except cash. So anyway, I've gone on too long about that, and I don't want to get I don't want to blow the topic. So we're gonna cover that later. But again, gonna revisit that whole dirtiest word in investing and go back over it. But let's move on to the market update. This incredible level of volatility is we're still cranking, and in some ways, it's kind of comforting to me. Just because I still have the taste of 2016 and 2017 in my mouth with the VIX just being sat on constantly. And, you know, we're bouncing around between 15 and 20. So I think that's, you know, it's a healthier place. But these moves are exaggerated. Somebody was running through where we were at so far this year and the level of, you know, 1 and 2% moves over these, you know, 45-day periods of time or 60-day periods of time or excuse me, not 1 and 2%, 5% up and then 7% down. And they had a breakdown. I should have brought it, you know, bear with me. I forgot it, but I should have brought the breakdown because it's remarkable. But, you know, as far as what's going on, let me preface this by just saying it. You guys know what side of this I'm on, right? As a value guy, I want to be cautious that I'm not seeing what I want to see, right? We're all susceptible to confirmation bias. But it does look to me like the chill or or the deep freeze that has been in value seems to be turning. And I think it's I think you can see it yesterday because, well, maybe I think yesterday everything was just up. Was it the day before? There was one trading day this week where some of the hot stocks, like, you know, Shopify or Beyond Meat, you know, all the nut stocks that we talk about, I think even Tesla was down and the Dow was up sharply and some of our value names were working. We just haven't seen that a lot. And so I'm hoping that those signs that we've been seeing for a while in value, I'm hoping this is the beginning of a trend. It sure looks that way. I'll tell you what is in a trend. Let's pull it up right now. This gold move continues. We got a little weakness today. We got a little pullback in gold. We're sitting right around 1530. But man, this has been an impressive move. And you've also seen it in the face of dollar strength. We, again, last time we had Bill Fleckenstein on. Darren, I always screw it up. I've interviewed the guy twice, but he corrected me the first time. Do you remember when I interviewed Bill Fleckenstein? Do you remember whether he, because he corrected me, he said Bill Fleckenstein or Bill?
No, I'd have to go back and see. I do not remember.
I should see. These are things I, no, they're, I'm not blaming you. These are things that I should remember. Anyway,
yeah,
Bill, and I don't think Bill's listening to the show anyway, but if you are. If you got unlucky enough to get in the car between the showtime and you were unlucky enough to have it on this station, My apologies, Bill. Anyway, there was so much consternation when we started talking about this 2.5 years ago that we thought that one of the, you know, the signs of the end of this run would be a dollar rally and a gold rally at the same time. And I had to listen to an exhausting amount of people telling me, well, gold can't go up if the dollar's rallying because it's denominated in dollars. And I'm like, yes, I am aware. I am aware that commodities settle in U.S. dollars. That did not escape me. The reason why I thought that that might be the case was because of the unprecedented amount of liabilities out there. And by liabilities, I just mean debt. Right. Regardless of whether we're talking the Eurozone or whether we're talking the corporate bond market, and that the incredible amount of this, 70% of the debt outstanding. And when you've got a world right now where the amount of debt outstanding is somewhere around 360% of global GDP or some insanity like that, 70% of that debt is denominated in U.S. dollars. So when this cycle starts to turn, the rush toward dollars is going to be it has to happen. Right. It's a mechanical aspect of the market. It's not really us anticipating an investment move, but it's almost like markets will be forcing people's hands. And because of that intense liability, I also thought that the rush into gold would be pretty epic as well, because gold has no contingent liabilities, right? None. There's nothing anybody can do that's going to negatively impact your gold, right? I mean, global happenings or maybe the resolution of the trade scenario with China, maybe that will dampen the price of gold over the short run. But my point is no one goes bankrupt and kills gold, right? It can't happen. It's not like owning a stock or a bond. It can't default. You're not relying on anybody else, to make your gold good, right? You buy an ounce of gold, and it's not like the manager of that gold is going to screw it up. And that aspect alone made us think that that's why you'd see the big dollar rally, and that's why you'd also see that accompanied by gold. And that's exactly what's happened. I didn't think it would be quite this dramatic, because when you look at dollar strength, again, according to the people out there that told me that it was impossible for the two to rise at the same time, it's not like the dollar has really spiked higher. Especially over the last, it's had some pretty good moves over the last year, but not in the last 6 months. We've been hovering around this 97, 98 area on DXY. But DXY isn't telling the whole story. When you look at the dollar against another basket of foreign currencies, we're bumping up against extreme highs. And regardless of your economic outlook, I always love this. I get messages or emails from people that typically aren't in the investment community. They go, hey, look, Zach, I don't agree with you. And I'm like, well, with what part? And they're like, it's this or that. And I go, well, that's not an opinion. That's a fact. And we share opinions on this show, right? Like saying the dollar and gold would rally at the same time. That's an opinion. That's not a fact. Now, that's played out, but it's, not a fact. But when I tell you that there's broad spread economic weakness across the world, and that the U.S. dollar is bumping up against, significant decade type highs when valued against other currencies. Again, not an opinion. That's a fact. What does that illustrate? It illustrates stress in financial markets, period. That's just what it is. So, these are things that we should be paying attention to on the stock side of it. We've had a nice week for us personally. I think markets pretty much just zigzagged. But again, some of these value names are perking up. Another one that we're watching closely, this is not a recommendation, but I've taken a lot of flack for Tailored Brands. TLRD is the name of the ticker. Again, this is not a recommendation. I'm not telling you to buy it. I'm not telling you to sell it. I'm not telling you to short it. If you want to talk about Tailored Brands, give me a call, right? 866-779-RISK. How do you like that? You see how I squeezed that in there? I'm getting better at it, man. I'm telling you. Got to be a little promotional. But anyway, Michael Burry, the main guy of The Big Short, came out and loaded up on. He already owned it. He was, I think, his seventh or eighth largest position. But I believe as of today, it's his largest position. And he's advocating for the company to do exactly what we thought, which is, you know, good confirmation, pretty smart guy. I think it just illustrates that a broken clock's right twice a day, right? but anyway, again, that's getting some wind. It hasn't broken out yet. I think it's got a lot. I think it's got a lot higher to run. Again, not a recommendation. And I mean that, guys. I'm not just saying that to keep myself out of trouble. Pull up a chart on the thing. This thing has been it's been a house of pain. It's not been a fun one. But when you start seeing investor attention turn toward this, I'm hoping that we're seeing a change here. There a lot of talk still, and we focused on this in the recent weeks. I don't want to belabor it, but a lot of talk, a lot of focus on, is a recession coming? Yield curve inversion. We've talked about that. I don't want to go into that anymore. Probably if I talk anymore about yield curve inversion, I think people would probably just turn it off. And there's enough people talking about it. Plenty of stuff out there. But we are seeing continued economic weakness. But again, I want to reiterate the fact that there are yellow lights blinking. They're certainly not red lights. I am a bit surprised, though, by yields, especially on the 10-year, and how sticky that is. We're not seeing any pressure come out of that trade, and that's run a lot. Again, another sign of stress, right? And notice I didn't say breakdown. I just said stress. There is clearly stress out there, and I don't think that's the story that's being told enough. Again, not Chicken Littles, right? The sky's not falling, but it's certainly something that we want to pay attention to and be aware of. Other than that, not a lot going on, especially with the big stocks. Just kind of a lot of sideways drifting here, which is basically, look, I mean, there's been more dramatic points, but that's sort of been the trend now for almost 2 years. So anyway, we got to wrap up the opening segment. We got a ton to get to, and I really want to hammer on the Fed. I'm excited. Darren, I got some really good Fed fodder. Bill Dudley, my good buddy Bill Dudley, made some really interesting comments this week, and I just, I'm really having a hard time biting my tongue. And I'm not going to. We're going to let slip the dogs of war, as Shakespeare himself said. So anyway, look, guys, you know the drill. All the stuff that we're talking about, our risk managed approach, right? Lowering your fees, increasing your upside, drastically reducing your downside risk. If this is interesting to you, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. We can do a phone consultation. We can meet in person. We can get you our complimentary booklet. And just educate yourself, guys. This isn't some like, you know, formulaic sales process that we're going to twist your arm and I'm going to lock you in a room for 2 hours and strap you to a chair and make you listen to my, I'm not even going to make you come to a dinner. Yeah, you know, all these, the investor dinners, and no knock on them. I actually did it once, but no, we're just going to give you the information. We're going to show you the performance and let you make up the decision for yourself, but you can do that. You can drastically lower your fees, drastically reduce your downside risk, and greatly improve your upside potential. So give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. You can go to Bulwark Capital Management's website. You can Google us, Know Your Risk Radio. Download the podcast on Stitcher or MyNorthwest.com. You guys know the drill. Anyway, stick with us. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to KnowYourRiskRadio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Brian Ott from 525 Advisors and host of Long Term Care Radio. And Brian, we have another great question from a listener. What happens if I don't use my long term care insurance?
You know, Dory, nobody likes to pay for something they don't use. In the past, if you never used your long term care insurance, the premiums you paid were simply gone, just like homeowners or car insurance. But you know what? Things have changed. We now have new programs that will pay you back even if you don't use them for long term care. You can find out about all the new programs, including ones that pay you back, at 525longtermcare.com. While you are there, you can send us your question and even sign up for a free class. And don't forget to join us every Saturday morning on Cairo for Long Term Care Radio.
Brian has two classes coming up Friday, September 20th, and Saturday, the 21st. Seating's limited, so sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. Classes are free, and you'll even get a copy of Brian's book, which has a ton of great info. Go to 525longtermcare.com.
We've all heard the term buy low and sell high, and markets have recently hit another all-time high. And that begs the question, is this the top? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Is this the top? No one knows. The truth is, we no longer need to know. By using our risk-managed stock portfolios and Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we can lower your fees, increase your upside, and drastically reduce your risk exposure. This is now the longest bull market in U.S. financial history, and stock valuations have never been higher. So why risk it? Call now to get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement in place where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for sticking with us. And I want to get right into this next topic because I enjoy it. the Fed, Federal Reserve. And I want to dedicate, first of all, I want to dedicate this show, if he's listening. I don't know if he is. But I want to dedicate this segment to my good buddy on Twitter, Mr. Rudy Havenstein, who is the most ardent critic of the Fed, and I love it. It's both informative and hilarious at the same time. So this is for Rudy. He's going to love this. And his name's not really Rudy Havenstein. That was the name of the head of the Bundesbank. And I don't know if it was called the Bundesbank back then. But during the whole Weimar Republic, when Germany had hyperinflation, so it's kind of anyway, you get to know Rudy really well via Twitter, but I still don't know his real name, and he won't come on the show yet. So if you've got a Twitter account, lobby Rudy to have him on the show, and we'll still conceal his identity, or he doesn't even have to tell me actually. But anyway, a little side story. But getting back to it, the Fed, some really interesting comments. And I don't think President Trump's done himself any favors by calling out the Fed constantly and going after Jay Powell. I understand, you know, the frustration he's got and the consternation involved in that discussion, because I do think it was really, we talked about it on the show. I thought they were running into these rate hikes way too quickly. And I think the Fed is always, since this whole QE abomination started back in 2009, I think the Fed is greatly overestimated their ability to back out of it. And it just makes logical sense, right? If you're going to save an economy, quote unquote, save an economy by printing trillions of dollars and dumping them into the system. Now, they stayed on the bank's reserves balance sheet. There are a lot of different issues. But anyway, for sake of brevity and simplicity, let's just say that, look, they pumped trillions of dollars into the system to levitate asset prices and add stability into the financial sector, right? What critics of the Fed, like me, were saying at the time is that you're not going to be able to unwind this. The market is going to discount this into asset prices. It's going to use it for stability. You're not just going to be able to take that spigot away. It's not that easy. And that's been the case. Right, the market's gone sideways since January of 2018. I mean, the S&P right now is at 29.26. The high last January was 28.73. So what is that? Is that even 1% away or 1.5% away? But just sideways. And that coincides with a 8-month lag or something like that with the ending of quantitative easing and the beginning of quantitative tightening. Right, the minute they turned off the spigots, the market's gone sideways. It's lost its upward momentum. If you want another example of how that works, go look at Boeing stock, right? Everybody's blaming it on the airline. And you guys know my take on Boeing. I think there's a lot more problems there. And I think that more things will be uncovered. I don't think they're as profitable as they look. I don't think that there is fraud there. I just think that they are, I think that they're skinning the sheep instead of shearing it, right? I think that they are maximizing profits at the long term, at the expense of the long term health of the firm. But the interesting thing is that when all this issue started with Boeing, they quit, they suspended their stock buyback, right? Where has their stock gone since then? It's bounced around. It's been volatile, but it's still just trading in that mid 300s range, almost a whole $100 off its all time high, right? So you could pin it all on the crashes. But what we're seeing is the minute this capital from artificial means quits flowing into an individual stock or the stock market as a whole, things have been stalling out. Now, I'm not saying that's the entire reason, but there's certainly some correlation there. And Bill Dudley came out, he was never the head of the Fed, but he was on the FOMC, the open markets, the Fed's open market committee. And his thing was he came out and I couldn't believe he said this, because everybody sort of treats the Fed like a sacred cow, right? Especially if you're intelligent, right? If you're part of the financial elite, especially, the Wall Street types, and we're going to treat the Fed like a sacred cow. Oh, how dare you talk about the Fed? They're politically impartial. Well, look, no one's politically impartial, okay? Especially the guys at the Fed that, again, and this has only increased since 2008, that are absolutely positive, and they've got the degrees to prove it, that they're the smartest guys in the world, certainly in the room, at all times. But I just could not believe that Dudley was this. I'm glad he was. Big fan of transparency. But I couldn't believe that he was as open and as candid as he was when he came out and said that the Fed should hold core. And I'm summarizing here, but if you want to pull it up, go Google Bill Dudley comments, or just Google his name. This stuff's going to come up. But he basically said the Fed should hold course, not give in to Trump. And he believed that it was part of the Fed's responsibility. What he intimated was it was part of the Fed's responsibility to put their thumb on the scale of the next presidential election. Which is, again, not surprised. That's what I would speculate they were saying behind closed doors. Not all of them. But that is in direct violation of law. That's in direct violation of what the Fed is supposed to be. It's also, again, going back to Bill Fleckenstein and his criticism of the Fed and Rudy's criticism of the Fed. And this is why guys like us are so opposed to the Federal Reserve. And I'm not saying I think we should abolish them. I think there are things that they do well. I don't want to get into that. But a lot of the problems that they put out, right? A great analogy of the Fed was, and I know Bill said this, but I'm not sure he's the one that's, no, excuse me. It was Jim Grant who made this statement. That the Fed, you know, is the world's greatest arsonist and then wants to be praised as firefighters when they come to put out the fire that they themselves started. Right. So they, you know, was it Geithner or Bernanke that wrote The Courage to Act, you know, in the financial crisis? Right. Well, they created it. There were other factors at play, but they again, using an analogy we used last week, they were the ones tilling the soil. They were the ones creating the fertile soil for the real estate crisis and the financial crisis to grow. It couldn't have happened, at least with the same, you know, intensity that it did, had the Fed not kept rates artificially low for too long. And why'd they do that? You know, I don't know. I think they sell it to themselves as, you know, oh, we've got the dual mandate, full employment and currency or price stability. And I just think they've extrapolated that way too far. But I personally believe one of the biggest reasons why they do that is just arrogance. I think they see themselves as the economic supermen. And, you know, they're at the peak. There are vast majority of them are academics, and they're at the peak of academia, right? Anybody who's a financial academic of any kind, you know, the Fed is their idol. And if you want to see what I'm talking about, turn on CNBC and watch Steve Leisman for a little while. I'm sure he's a great guy. I don't, again, not trying to denigrate anybody, but I just, every time they interview Leisman, it's just, I don't even watch CNBC anymore, and he's a big reason why. I mean, it's just, it's, just fawning over the Fed. It's embarrassing. But anyway, so yeah, so Dudley comes out and openly admits that the part of the Federal Reserve's role should be to influence the next election. And that should scare all of us, right? Darren, you're supposed to hit the sneeze button. I don't even think anybody heard it. I saw you covering up your nose and I was like, what's going on here?
My bad.
Don't worry about it, man. I had to point that out, try to stick it to you. Anyway, but talk about overstepping your mandate, right? And this is just, like I said, I'm going round and round about it because it is just ghastly. I could not believe what I was reading when I read it. You're going to go now. The Federal Reserve is going to influence the next election, which basically what he was saying was run interest rates where they're currently at. Don't give in to Trump. So we dump the economy because we want a new president. I mean, this should scare us all. And maybe the Fed shouldn't be abolished. Like I said, I don't want to get into that conversation. I mean, if you put a gun to my head and said, would you like to get rid of the Fed? If certain other measures were put in place, yes. But I will admit this. I haven't dug into it deep enough to be an informed voice on whether we should abolish the Fed or not. But what I do know is this. I do know that in the last 20 years, they have created more problems than they have fixed. And the current situation is a great example. Right? What did they get into? $500 billion that we ran off in quantitative tightening? Was it even that much? Where's the balance sheet at today? I think it's somewhere between 3.8 or 4.2 trillion. Anyway, I should know those numbers, but they started running down the balance sheet and acted like it was going to be no problem. They could back right out of it, no big issue, and then boom, all the market volatility started hitting. So they can't just back, and this shouldn't come to any surprise or come as a surprise to anybody, right? If you're going to print $3.2 trillion, was that the amount? 3.2? Yeah, 3.6. Anyway, if you're going to print that kind of money and start dumping it into markets and buying back bonds from prime dealers and all these different things, that's tough to undo. And one of the reasons it's tough to undo is because nobody has that kind of balance sheet. There's nobody else to step in and start absorbing that liquidity in the market. The Fed's the only one that can do it. So, of course, it's going to be tough to back out of it. But just that arrogance, right? That's not the way it looks on their models. And this is something that is beyond politics, right? I recently hit, and I'm forgetting who it was. Maybe it was, I don't want to speculate. But another Fed member, I think it was Jay Powell himself. Somebody asked him a question about the record gap between the wealthy and the poor in this country, right? Which, if you did not know, the wealth gap in this country is currently larger than it's been at any other time, including 1929. Right? Jay Powell stood up there and said, hey, the Fed doesn't impact that. What? Really? Okay, let's backtrack for a second. 08-09, financial crisis happens, which you had a major hand in causing. Then you step in and think about this. Let's just look at the basic actions. Okay, you tighten lending standards, which would have happened on its own because you're going through a default cycle and lending standards tighten during default cycles. But you drop record interest rates to record lows. And at the same time, you increase lending standards. What does that mean in all practicality? What it means is that the only people that can take advantage of both, right? The one gift that recessions give us is low prices. That's it. That's the only benefit. Okay, so then you drop the cost of money to 0%, record low, and you increase lending standards. What does that mean? It means that the only people that can access capital markets and take advantage of the one benefit that we have during a recession are people that have balance sheets that can support the loan, right? I.e. the rich. So by the time the average guy's balance sheet heals to the point where he can actually buy a house or buy stocks or whatever the case may be, you know, they've already bounced 30, 40, 50% off the bottom. I mean, and then then you fast forward today and we got the biggest wealth gap between the rich and the poor in history. And then Jay Powell's got to, And then Jay Powell's got the complete absence of humility to step in there and say, you know, the Fed may have played a part. No, that's got nothing to do with us. And I think Jay Powell's a stand-up guy compared to Dudley. At least he's not sitting there advocating for the Fed to weigh in on the election and tank the economy to get Trump out of the Oval. I mean, this is just, it's madness. And just when you think you've reached record madness, you know, you hear a comment like this. Now, here's the bright side, right? And again, all of this does not portend well, you know, to what's coming. And again, when the timing of it, it's impossible to know, guys. But I think that we should all keep in mind that on 9 out of 10 metrics, valuations here in U.S. equity markets have never been higher, while simultaneously lower around the world, right? By far and away, the U.S. equity market is outperforming to record levels. And you got all the, again, it's a perfect, I've been saying this now for a year, and I'm going to keep saying it. And I'm going to keep saying it regardless of which direction markets go, because it's the truth. Now is the time for a risk-managed strategy in your portfolio. You're looking at a world, again, especially if that risk management strategy does not cost you upside, right? Think about what is investing all about. It's about maximizing risk and reward. It's about getting what we refer to as positive convexity, right? We want to lower our risk exposure and increase our upside potential. And by using our bond replacement strategy and our risk managed stock portfolios, we can do that. And we can lower your fees. It's not snake oil. Don't be the guy that's sitting there holding the bag when the next nasty market term. Prepare yourself. I've said it. I go through these client portfolios all the time, retail investment all the time. Well, Zach, I don't own any tech. I look at 35% of their portfolios in tech. They're 80% stocks, 20% bonds in their 70s. And then I ask them, why are you so aggressively positioned? Well, because the bonds aren't paying anything. Well, and that's the quandary we're in, right? Who said it recently? I was listening to a podcast. Oh, it was Louis Gov from GovCal, macro researcher and brilliant guy. But he said, look, people are hedging their record priced equity portfolios with record price bonds or way over price bonds. You're not as insulated as you think. And you know, if you sit down with us, we can show you what we mean. You don't have to get it from me. You can just see it. I'll point it out. I'll show you what we mean. I'll show you how bonds have underperformed. And God forbid what they'll look like if rates start going up, which I don't think is going to happen. But regardless, the whole point is your bond portfolio is next to no upside with a lot of potential downside. Doesn't sound like a very good defensive strategy to me. And if it doesn't to you, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Find the podcast. And we got some great interviews coming up toward the end of this month. And I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you who it is. We're also working on a couple others. But anyway, I would sign up for the podcast and not to listen to me, obviously, but to listen to the guys we got coming on. Anyway, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Brian Ott from 525 Advisors and host of Long Term Care Radio. And Brian, we have another great question from a listener. What happens if I don't use my long-term care insurance?
You know, Dory, nobody likes to pay for something they don't use. In the past, if you never used your long-term care insurance, the premiums you paid were simply gone, just like homeowners or car insurance. But you know what? Things have changed. We now have new programs that will pay you back even if you don't use them for long-term care. You can find out about all the new programs, including ones that pay you back, at 525longtermcare.com. While you are there, you can send us your question and even sign up for a free class. And don't forget to join us every Saturday morning on Cairo for Long Term Care Radio.
Brian has two classes coming up, Friday, September 20th, and Saturday, the 21st. Seating's limited, so sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. Classes are free, and you'll even get a copy of Brian's book, which has a ton of great info. Go to 525longtermcare.com.
We've all heard the term buy low and sell high, and markets have recently hit another all-time high. And that begs the question, is this the top? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Is this the top? No one knows. The truth is, we no longer need to know. By using our risk-managed stock portfolios and Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we can lower your fees, increase your upside, and drastically reduce your risk exposure. This is now the longest bull market in U.S. financial history, and stock valuations have never been higher. So why risk it? Call now to get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement in place where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. I'm sitting here reeling a little bit right now because I just found out. We've been doing this like 3 years now, haven't we? I just found out that there's, and I'm not going to name any names, but there's many guys on this station and around, and then the conversation just started mushrooming through the break here. That people change their names. I literally feel like a little kid that just found out that Santa Claus isn't real. No, this is just blowing my mind. Maybe I should. What would my name be? I'd like Jack Bauer. But I can't joke around about that. I've got a new client whose name legitimate. I can't say that out loud. I'm breaking all kinds of rules here. Anyway, before I get myself in trouble, you see, this is throwing me for a loop. You can't do this to me in the breaks, Darren. It's all Darren. You guys see, how quick that happens? It becomes Darren's fault. He goes from being the best in the game to the genesis of all that's wrong with the show.
I've always wanted a radio name.
Have you?
Yeah.
Let's give you one.
Well, I had some listeners of my podcast give me one once, and it's a good story. It was D Plus, because my name starts with a D. And because the only grade I've ever in my life gotten below a C in any class was I got a D plus in audio production.
And you're a radio producer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that actually makes sense though, right? Like, for instance, I'm in, it's not really that related. I'm in finance. My weakest subject in school was math. I think I'd be much better. It bored me. I was thinking like D money. You know, and then you could tell people, you could sit. I'd love to watch that conversation unfold. You could be like, no, really, that's my name. And it's French. You know, you put a little apostrophe on there. D. Monet. Yeah. And then just sell them on that. That would be good. And it would work with our show, right? Look, even our producer's last name is Money. This is how it works.
We're destined.
We're onto something here. Anyway, I've gotten off course as always. I'm like that dog. In the movie Up that my kids love to watch, right? Squirrel, right in the middle of every comment. Squirrel, just the ADD dog. Anyway, okay, let's get into it, though. Dirtiest word in investing. Haven't done a topic like this in a while. One of the reasons I haven't done a topic like this in a while is just because I don't particularly like talking about it because there's so much slime around the word, and I'm just going to say it. I'm going to break radio protocol, annuity. There's so much slime around the word, and so much of it is earned. There's a really... Listen, there are other radio shows on this station. I'm not going to bring any names up, because I don't want to denigrate anybody. You guys know that. We do not market ourselves in a way to put other people down. I think most of the people in this industry are good. I also believe that most people have good intentions. There are exceptions to every rule. But I think the hype on both sides of this topic is completely misguided. You've got the Ken Fishers of the world. Annuities are awful. And the first thing I start with is, well, what kind of annuity are you talking about? Do you think pensions are awful? That's an annuity, right? You say high fees. Well, what about no fee annuities? They exist. Use them. What are we talking about? Okay, they cap your upside. Well, unless you're using one with no cap, which is what we use, right? You need to know what you're buying. And for the vast majority of you, the minute you hear someone talking about guaranteed 6% returns, turn the station. It doesn't exist. What they're talking about is paying you a guaranteed stream of income that is 6% of your principal. Okay, that's not a return. Your account isn't growing by that much. They're paying you your own money at a rate of 6% of your principal. It's essentially how it works. And then they tell you, oh, it can grow with the market. Okay, what you need to know, that's probably a true statement. But how much can it grow? The vast majority of income annuities out there, even fixed index products like the ones we use, have caps that cap your performance. Now, stay with me here. The reason that cap is a problem, and the way they'll sell it to you, oh, well, the cap's at 6%, the cap's 7%. This is your safe money. If it makes 6 or 7, that's a good deal. You're never going to make 6 or 7. Let me explain to you why. If I've got a 6% cap on your fixed indexed annuity, and I also have a 1.2% annual fee, the best you can do is 4.8. Now, that might be based on a 50% return in the S&P 500, but in a year like 2013, when the S&P is up 31% and you make 4.8, you're not going to like your annuity. And I'm not going to blame you. But that's what you bought. Okay? And you bought it for all the wrong reasons. You probably even got a 6%, 7%, even 8% upfront quote-unquote signing bonus. Little did you know, when you accepted that signing bonus of 8%, you also signed a 10% contract, and that product, because of the signing bonus, has a 1.2% annual fee. Do the math. You just paid 12% for 8. And this is why there is so much negative there's so many negative feelings and connotations around the word annuity. And now, on the flip side, so now getting to the people that are saying all the negative stuff about the annuity, right? Backtracking to what I was saying about Ken Fisher. So those things I said are true. Those are misleading things about annuities. Variable annuities happen to be the ones that I dislike the most. If you listen to Ken Fisher talk, he's not lying. He's talking about variable annuities, though. That's just one sector, guys. And I agree with him. I get in this debate all the time. Well, Ken Fisher said, what do you think about what Ken Fisher says, Zach? I go, I agree with him. They go, why are you doing it? Because I'm not talking to you about a variable annuity. And remember, the way that we're positioning them, and I said this earlier, and take this with a grain of salt, because again, I'm not denigrating anybody, but if you're listening to somebody tell you that all you should do are annuities, and I'm proud of, you know, whatever it is, you know, I'm proud of the fact that I don't have any stocks because my clients can't lose it, run the other way. Right? Well, why? Because it's diversification. Stocks are the greatest wealth generator at all time. Right? And if you're listening to me right now, your ears should be burning a little bit, because isn't the truth always somewhere in the middle? Right? It's usually never on the extreme bad side. It's usually never on the extreme good side. The truth is typically somewhere in the middle. And the same is true as it relates to this conversation. If you're looking for the kind of investment where you can average 5 to 6.5, high side 7, low side 4.5, right? You know, somewhere in there, right? Because it's these products, even the ones we use, they're driven by markets. So the market goes up, you're going to go up with it. But you're absolutely 100% protected against downside with no expense fee. If you're looking for that conservative type of investment for a pile of cash or as a bond replacement, these are great products. If you're using the right ones, and that's a big if, but it should be part of a portfolio, right? It shouldn't be everything. And because of a word called diversification, people mock diversification until it saves them. Okay, so it's about how you use it. The analogy I've used before is, a hammer is a great tool. Love hammers. You're framing, you need a hammer. If you're installing cabinets, hammer's not going to come in too handy. Doesn't mean it's bad, right? The same is true about fixed indexed annuities. The same is true about REITs. The same is true about MLPs, who I was just talking about these types of investments with somebody in the studio. They all have a place, but it's what purpose is it serving? You know, for instance, if you got a pile of money that that liquidity doesn't matter and you just want to earn a good return on it, but you want it to be safe, one of these fixed index annuities, assuming it's the kind that we're talking about with no cap to your upside, so if the markets go through the roof, you're benefiting from it, that has no fee, so in years where you don't make anything, you're not going backwards, that's insured against loss, right? It's a great alternative. It's great. Again, we're getting back into the contingent liability. It's the only asset you're going to own that is absolutely 100% insured against loss. The only one. That's not a bad part of your portfolio to have. Now, flipping over to the other side, though, it's not, don't listen to these guys that are sitting there telling you that it's an alternative to stocks, because what's going to happen is you're going to have the years like 2013 where the market's up 31% and your 4.8 isn't going to feel very good. It's just not. And don't get caught up in the whole guaranteed income thing. It can be appropriate, but most of the time it isn't. Why? Because you'd be better getting a higher growth rate on your money over time than getting the what feels like a security blanket of guaranteed income. Right? Let's put it this way. If you're buying one of these fixed indexed annuities for the guaranteed income, which is what a lot of guys push because clients love the word guaranteed, you need to know something right out of the gate. You're going to pay more for it, right? Everything comes at a cost. You're going to pay more for it, and it's not going to grow as fast. Okay, where I sit there and I go, look, keep your guarantee, and rather than something that's going to grow at a rate of 2 to 2.5%, give me something that's going to grow at a rate of 5 to 6.5%. And I'll pay myself out of the excess returns and I'll control my money, right? That's where it's a bond replacement like we talk about all the time. And we're getting more, and we're getting more upside through the equity markets while still being insured against loss, and we're lowering fees. That's a valuable part. Do every one of our clients have one? No, it's not suitable for every client. But if we got clients who need, based on their portfolio and their risk profile, if they need 40 or 50% of their money to be low risk, I mean, shoot, guys, it's the only game in town. I wish it wasn't that case because I still find annuities boring. They don't interest me. But if you use them correctly and you use the right products, they fill the role. And guys in finance like me aren't supposed to talk about it. I was on a couple other shows and podcasts recently, and they asked me, this subject came up, and I just smiled and I went, man, I don't want to talk about this. Just because everybody in the industry kind of turns their nose up at you. Oh, he's one of those guys. It kind of like it lowers your IQ like 15 points the minute you say something like that, right, in other people's eyes. But at the same time, if you took that word away and said, look, we've got this investment that's insured against loss, it's been cranking out 5.5 to 6.5% returns, and it has no fees, and we think it's a great place to put cash, everybody would look at you and go, what is it? Tell me. Right? But the dirtiest word in investing comes out, and the noses turn up, and they walk away. And that's kind of how we came to it, because the value investor in me went, wait a second, everybody hates this? So if these types of things interest you guys, and if you don't know if you've got a risk managed portfolio, you don't. If you don't know it, you don't. But if getting that 50 to 60% upside of the stock market, having a risk balanced approach on the stock side of the portfolio, balancing those two together and getting the benefits of both, if that interests you, which it should, more upside, less fees, less downside, big part of your portfolio now insured against loss, these things should interest you. And if they do, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Go to our iTunes page, sign up for the iTunes podcast. Get the booklet, Common Sense Investing. There are no catches. There are no gimmicks, guys. We're not going to loop you into a sales process. If you don't feel like having the phone call, a little too personal, just shoot us an email. We can do correspondence over email, but educate yourself. There's better ways to do it. You can increase your upside while drastically lowering your fees and lowering your exposure to risk. Anyway, we got to run. Got some football. First Dogs game tomorrow. Go Dogs. and have a great weekend. We'll be back next week. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.